The Be Rad podcast is brought to you by MOFO, Male Optimization Formula with Organs to Boost Testosterone. Brad's Macadamia Masterpiece, mind-blowing nut butter blend now available on Amazon. Bala Enzyme, electrolyte and triple enzyme recovery drink mix. Paleo Valley, nutrient-rich, ancestral-inspired health products. By Optimizers, performance supplements like magnesium, probiotics, and more. And B-Rad Whey Protein Super Fuel, coming soon. Stay tuned for details. And please visit bradkearns.com to check out my personal selection of favorite products for health, fitness, and peak performance with great discounts for listeners. And here we go with the show.
And he said, "You worry too much." And I said, "Huh?" He goes, "Your ovaries are fine. You worry too much." Hence the stress connection. I planted a seed. People who have been doing keto for a long time can feel better when they pause and add some carbohydrates back in. There's all kinds of stuff that goes on physiologically. Resetting your circadian rhythm is essential to healing.
Hey, listeners, I discovered an awesome new electrolyte and triple enzyme powdered drink that's going to knock your socks off. It's called Bala Enzyme, and it comes in a convenient little pouch of bright orange powder that you pour into water for the ultimate electrolyte and antioxidant drink. It's simple, convenient, and yes, the orange tint comes from a potent serving of turmeric, along with a clean and diverse assortment of enzymes and electrolytes, and a perfect taste that's not fake or too sweet. Bala was created by husband and wife doctors to help their patients recover from inflammation, improve hydration, speed up recovery, even relieve joint pain, improve digestion, and boost immunity. I love their incredible devotion to product quality. There's a lot of research behind it, and I just sprinkle this packet into ice water, and it's so easy to stay hydrated because you absolutely enjoy the taste of the drink. Get their convenient little packets. They even designed it with the tear half torn, so it's easy to open into the water. I love what they think of. And it comes in three exciting flavors: pineapple, lime, and berry. It's so potent, it might stain your fingers if you get it on your fingers. And yes, that's a good thing for a serving of turmeric that's that potent. It's also sugar-free, zero carb, and promoting of the three R's: rehydrate, relieve, and revive. Please visit balaenzyme.com, B-A-L-A-E-N-Z-Y-M-E. And of course, there's a special deal for B-Rad podcast listeners, 30% off your first order. Just use the code B-R-A-D-30 at balaenzyme.com. Hey, listeners, I am so pleased to present this powerful and memorable show with Dr. Anna Kabeca. She returns to the podcast. We talked a couple of years ago about her previous book, Keto Green 16. She has a new book called Menu Pause, 5 Unique Eating Plans to Break Through Your Weight Loss Plateau and Improve Mood, Sleep, and Hot Flashes. And yes, we will get into the book and her unique approach to dietary intervention for health. But boy, you get more than you're bargained for in this show right away. And she gets into an incredibly personal and mind-blowing story of sustaining a terrible tragedy in her life, dealing with PTSD, hitting some dead ends, and finding out that she was infertile and having the traditional diagnosis from some of the top physicians in the country. It caused her to go on a global travel odyssey to just find herself. She closed her her mainstream medical practice. She's a board certified MD, OBGYN. And so she just kind of went on this this personal journey, engaged with numerous mystical and alternative healers around the globe. They gave her these life-changing insights, and really, this show is going to rock your world. So let's hear this amazing personal journey that Dr. Anna's been on, and then transition into some discussion about the content in not only her new book, but in her previous books, The Hormone Fix, Keto Green 16, and the new book, Menu Pause. And interestingly, she talks about 5 unique eating plans, as you heard in the subtitle, and these cross the entire spectrum. So very rare to find a guest that is not pigeonholed into, hey, here's our carnivore promoter, here's our plant-based person, here's our keto, here's our primal. She goes the whole spectrum. So she has an actual carnivore-ish test period in your diet to see how your body reacts and maybe get some improvement in symptoms. And she also has a plant-based progression where you're going to eliminate animal products, animal proteins, and go straight into the green stuff. And this just shows how incredibly personalized it is, as you hear people often say. But she recommends going through a variety of different experiments. And so it's a really fresh take on a lot of things that we hear in the health space. And boy, Dr. Anna's something else. You're going to love the show. Here she is for the second time, the author of Menu Pause, Dr. Anna Kabeca. Dr. Anna Kabeca, we meet again. How nice. It's been a while. And here we have another momentous occasion, another book by Dr. Anna cranking them out despite your busy life. I think in case listeners want to get refreshed, tell us about your practice, your whole deal, and then we can lead into the great occasion of the publication of Menu Pause. And that's Menu Pause, people. We are going to talk about menopause, but the title is Menu Pause. Very, very clever.
Very clever. I know. I love the title. I love the concept. And I think there is magic in the pauses of our lives. So it's a perfect, perfect title. And especially for women going through a seasonal transition, that we can look for that magic and really try to harness it when it can feel terrible and something no one wants to talk about. So a little bit about my story is I'm a board certified gynecologist and obstetrician. I trained at Emory University, and then I was in private practice as a National Health Service Corps scholar for over 15 years in Southeast Georgia, in St. Simons Island, Georgia. And I did integrative women's health. And part of my own journey, I closed my practice in 2015, actually burnt out from my practice, being a single mom, taking care of my patients from around the world and, you know, pedal to the metal and dealing with under the surface post-traumatic stress disorder and really just feeling it, you know, the consequences, especially as I was going through, I like to call my second menopause, that transition time. It was really problematic. And I, you know, that led me to discover what I teach and share about now online.
So what's the nature of the PTSD in your example? You were working really hard, single momming, having a high powered practice, and it was just overly stressful? Or
yeah, in 2006, my toddler son died in a tragic accident, Brad. And I resuscitated him, and he died at the hospital. And the hospital that I practiced at for however many years. Boy. And that was just, I mean, just trauma. I mean, I don't remember a lot of that, what happened. I remember bits and pieces, but I don't remember very much actually about that time at all. And, you know, always thinking, okay, the grief and the tragedy and the trauma. And, you know, I was solo practice. I still had to work and figure that out. And as a result, my husband and I, we wanted to try to have another baby. And it was determined that I was in early menopause. I had premature ovarian failure, and I failed the highest doses of injectable meds. So it was trauma on trauma. Trauma on trauma. And for anyone who's struggled with fertility or and wasn't able to get pregnant, every time you see the negative pregnancy test or you get spotting from a period or whatever it may be, it's trauma again, it's loss again and again. And so that PTSD was under the surface, and then not recognizing or really understanding PTSD and the triggers. And that had taken us on a journey around the world. I closed my practice. Well, actually, a beautiful doctor out of Atlanta, Dr. Deborah Shepherd, came and took over my practice for a year. And I journeyed around the world. I felt like I had to keep the earth moving under my feet. And I love the Buddha saying, everywhere you go, there you are. But it took me around the world to figure that one out. So, and as a result of that, reversed the early menopause and had a beautiful baby at age 41, the child I was told I was not able to have. And, but yet the PTSD was under the surface. And it wasn't until like really recognizing how to heal from that trauma using multiple modalities, my keto green way that I talk about to empower physiology, empower oxytocin over cortisol. And it's hard. I mean, it's a hard place to be when you want to die every day. I mean, to try to think positive and have gratitude. And I mean, those, and you know, those physiologic changes are hard and you're combating PTSD. I know I didn't share this on your podcast and our other conversation. I feel like with the trauma we've had over the last 2 years, with a pandemic increasing cortisol and decreasing oxytocin, encouraging isolation and disconnect, it's that PTSD, it's that trauma, it's that cortisol, oxytocin disconnect that leads to divorces, that leads to burnout, that leads to, you know, inflammatory diseases of all kinds.
Wow. Okay. That's a pretty heavy start, Dr. Anna. Yeah, thank you for starting us off. Now, did you take the round the world trip prior to having the medical success of being able to come pregnant? Is that the timeline here? So you just took off, you needed to get out. The round the world trip, did it have a lot of agenda or did you guys just roll?
Serendipitous. And I met healers from around the world and ancient Andean philosopher to an Indonesian healer to some of the world's leading scientists. Yeah, all over the world. It was really amazing. And it was serendipitous. I mean, it was crazy who I met on the journey. And I just always say God's hand was in it. And as a result of that, really, I learned integrative therapies. I kept asking questions, like from Peru, learning about maca. That's when I ended up creating my Mighty Maca Plus. I really heard, they say it helps with fertility. And they call it the Peruvian Viagra. Like, who doesn't want to take that, right? But in combination, it's pretty darn awesome. I got to send you some of mine.
Look at you. I just ordered some. I don't know why I heard it from someone. So maybe it was listening to some of your stuff, but okay, I'm on board.
It's good. I'm going to have to send you my Mighty Maca Plus. It's maca with 30 superfoods. Other foods I experience, amazing. I mean, really, maca in of itself has amazing attributes. It has high arginine, which increases nitric oxide, which is how Viagra works. Okay? So pretty cool.
So prior to this odyssey, you were trained in traditional medical environment, practicing in Western medicine. Were you a dabbler in these kind of concepts, or was this a total awakening to kind of blend all your different, your angles?
Yeah, it was definitely an awakening, but I'm first generation American. I always like to say I grew up in the United Nations. My mom is from the Middle East and my dad's Portuguese, U.S. Navy. He was older, so he served in World War II as a young man. And so both my parents were a little older. But my mom was really, an amazing cook. And my mom really did integrate food as medicine. Like she would say, you know, we need to rub olive oil on your tummy for this. We need dandelion for this. We need, you know, but she also was diabetic in her 30s. And the standard American diet and the ADA approved diet, lots of fruits, which for a sugar addict, we love that, right? We absolutely love that. And it by age 52, she was undergoing heart surgery. And I'll never forget this, Brad, because my mom mostly stayed at home, but she baked for the leading restaurants in our area. And it was the first time I came home and the house wasn't smelling like something great was coming out of the oven and it was just empty. Mom was at 52. I was 16. She was undergoing heart surgery, cardiac bypass surgery. And I'll never forget that. And she struggled for 15 more years and passed away prematurely at age 67. But diabetes, heart disease, that's on both sides of my family. And it's very interesting that menopause is a risk factor for diabetes. And if you had a hysterectomy and your ovaries removed, research says your risk is even higher. So, I mean, it's really interesting to look at the connection between endocrinology, right, and gynecology. And we really have dissociated the two, but they're interrelated. And this is where insulin resistance has come into play. So I saw this in my own family and And so, and I travel, for me, I bought my first plane ticket at 13. My mom said, well, if you, and I wanted to travel to across the country to see my cousins. She goes, if you can buy your plane ticket, I'll let you go. Then I started traveling. Then 16, I did my first international flight. And I've been traveling ever since. That's a meditation.
Awesome. So when you returned from this global odyssey, you had this unfortunate medical diagnosis, but how were you able to unwind that, reverse it, whatever you want to talk about, and become fertile?
Yeah, I think there were several things. It certainly were using superfoods, alkalinizers, and letting go in spiritual work too. There was that part. And in Indonesia, I met this healer in Ubud, Indonesia, in Bali. And if you've read Eat, Love, Pray, I bet you it's the same guy. I hadn't read the book at the time. I read it much later, but I bet it was the same healer. Anyway, we were sitting out in the garden and chatting, and he looked at me and he said, well, what's on your mind? What are you worried about? And I said, well, I'm infertile and my ovaries are shot. I mean, you know, I'd done and seen my own ultrasounds, right? I'd failed the highest doses of injectable meds. And he touched the top of my head, Brad. I mean, I'm a Western trained physician, right? He touched the top of my head and he says, and I was painful. Doesn't hurt at all now, but it was painful. And I go, oh my gosh, what does that mean? And he said, you worry too much. And I said, huh? He goes, your ovaries are fine. You worry too much. Hence the stress connection that planted a seed.
Whew. Uh-huh. So uh-huh. When you...
Because we don't talk about reversing early. Right. I mean, I failed. Right.
Right. So when you go back and mix with your MD peers, how does this stuff fly? I mean, this is crazy, wacky stuff for the people that are towing that traditional line. I know we can, you can go address a group of mystics who are going to nod their heads and go, oh yes, the top of her head was, but how do you sell this to people that are kind of going, who is this wacky lady? I mean, it's nice that you have the credentials and you have been trained in Western medicine, but wait, that blend is a tough one sometimes.
Yeah. And it goes beyond that, right? Different philosophers, from an Andean philosopher to a Native American shaman to an Indonesian healer, all said the same thing. They said the organs hold energies and the breast hold the energy of relationships. The liver hold anger, the pancreas guilt, the kidneys fear. Well, the kidneys, our adrenal glands sit right there. Fight, flight, freeze, right? And so they all, each of them, different parts of the world, different philosophies, had that same tenet of what these energies, these organs hold. It was enough to make me pause. like try to integrate this and think, okay, what is the underlying mechanism of action? How does energy get stagnant? And hormones, like we talk about testing, and I am a hormone expert for sure, mm-hmm. but hormones are hard to test because they are energetic molecules. So why does energy stagnate in the breast? Why would it stagnate in the womb? Why would cancers, right? Cancers result from where there is stagnant energy or improper communication. When one cell can't turn its neighboring cell off, we get metastasis. That's physiologic. But there's an energy to that that is yet to be assessed. So quantum physics, you know, energy medicine, these things have to be addressed for us to get, you know, more advanced in our medical world. And traditional philosophies have a maybe cutting edge on us on that.
Why are they difficult to test hormones as energetic molecules?
Yeah, because when we're looking at them in the urine, in the saliva, in the blood, and each of those areas tell us something different. If we can measure energetically too, that's a key piece of it. And the reason is too, because hormones are going to react to our thoughts, to our actions, right? So they're going to be different. They'll be at different levels circulating at different, especially like testosterone, for instance. Like I'll tell my patients, I'm going to check your blood labs first, like at 10 a.m. in the morning, use your hormones the night before, come in fasting, no exercise to get this lab work done till after we're done doing the labs. And, you know, really relax and whatever it else may be, because we know with cortisol, if you're just slightly stressed, that cortisol spiking. Well, and the same thing will happen to your glucose. when cortisol goes up, glucose will go up. And so we want to create the same kind of situation every time you test your hormones. And the same is true. Like, for example, if I did a workout and then checked my hormones, I'd get a different reading than if I didn't. Mm-hmm. So there's an energy to that.
So the variation in numbers over the course of even a day or a week is going to be such that it's difficult to make some traditional diagnosis.
But they give a clue. And that's why I always tell my patients, you know, we're going to look at blood, urine, saliva, we're going to look at every body fluid you have at one time or another. It's going to tell us something. And I think that's really an important piece of it, that each body fluid will tell us something else. And so learning about that is critical. So we can wear monitors and monitor the physiology of our hormones throughout the day. It's coming.
So when the hand was placed on your head by the spiritual healer and he said that your ovaries were fine and you just worry too much, how long did it take, or what was the process for you to become a partial believer or a full believer, going all the way back to when you had a clean bill of health at some point, or I guess favorable blood test? Did anything change on the traditional medical front from your patient folder versus when you were diagnosed as infertile?
Yeah, well, definitely reversed menopause. I became pregnant spontaneously a few months later.
A few months later.
So whether you... what I was never going to have, right?
So whether you were a full believer or not, now you're a real believer because you're pregnant. But what was going on in your mindset from that first possibility of a different future?
It was just how curious, you know, how odd, how curious, you know, because I had seen my ovaries shriveled up. I'm like, what is he?
So what do you see? You're actually seeing on an X-ray or something?
Ultrasound. So when we're doing injectable meds for infertility, we're giving high dose hormones to stimulate the ovaries to create more follicles. And so a menopausal ovary is like an almond. A fertile ovary is like a walnut.
So you saw proof that the medical diagnosis was correct. You had the almonds instead of the walnuts. Okay.
And I'd failed round after round of injectable meds. Mm. And my reproductive endocrinologist, one of the best in the country, said your only option to have another child is egg donation. Okay. So that was like the end, right? From my standpoint, that was the end. I'm 39, no chance, 39, 40 at that point, no chance to have another baby. And, you know, that was the diagnosis. That's what, you know, belief is a big factor, right? The Biology of Belief, great book.
Yeah, Bruce was on my show and talking about those perception switches. So listeners, if you listen to both, that previous comment by Dr. Anna is tying that in, that this energetic aspect of the hormones can come from, I think you listed, you said your actions, your thoughts, any type of input is going to have an influence. Same with the guy putting the hand on your head. You could have an instant, changing of perception in the cells throughout your body.
Yeah, for sure. It's fascinating. I was doing other things too, you know, the Mighty Maca ingredients and the, praying and, you know, I'd been on this healing journey and talking to people. So there are other aspects too, but, you know, enough to make you go,
So did you have a glimmer of hope that maybe the diagnosis from one of the leading endocrinologists, OBGYNs in the country, was off base, or were you resigned to that fact?
I probably held internal hope. Like, God, if you wish this to happen, let it happen. And I would say to my clients, never give up hope. You never know, right? You never know. And so I never look at, and it really did change how I practiced medicine when I came back from my world journey. It was like diagnoses are just a description of underlying symptoms. If we get down to the underlying symptoms, all of these diagnoses can go away and we can reverse them. And so I started practicing in that way, and it made a difference. I went from doing 2 to 3 surgeries per week for GYN issues to 2 to 3 major surgeries per year. The body is powerful in healing itself.
So how did your practice change? Did you change your signage? Did you say, believe in possibility? Or were you still practicing as a traditional OBGYN and seeing a similar type of patient clientele?
Oh, yeah. GYN, small town Georgia, southeast Georgia. You know, wide range of patient base and bilingual, I'm bilingual. So, you know, a wide range of patients. And, but I definitely started doing this integrative approach. I started looking at nutraceuticals and supplementation. And of course, I'd already been doing bioidentical hormones and using even DHEA and testosterone in my female patients, but really working on that too, and more infertility and things like that. So I really had another perspective. I just kept studying, and from there on, triple boarded, right? I studied anti-aging and regenerative medicine, integrative medicine, and probably and more functional medicine. I mean, all of these things. So I just kept, you know, I am a sponge for knowledge, and especially world medicine, continue to be fascinated by long-held practices. And, you know, I always say, take what resonates and leave what doesn't.
and if it resonates, then you're correct that it's valid because it resonates, or you make it resonate, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would try it, right? Like the concept, I had a patient, for instance, who came in, and she's a nurse at from Waycross, Georgia. And she came in to my practice in Brunswick, and she had she was on her third round of pancreatitis. And she was, you know, the internist can't figure out anything. I have no idea why I keep getting this pancreatitis. I was like, oh my gosh. And I just thought about one of the things I learned as I traveled around the world. I said, is there something you're feeling guilty over? Ooh. And she just burst into tears. I just held safe space for her, let her cry. And then when I saw her for follow-up a couple months later, she goes, Dr. Anna, thank you, because I had to let something go and to deal with something. And I haven't felt better in a decade. Thank you. And pancreatitis never came back. Followed her for 6 more years till I closed my practice. Yeah.
This is not your average gynecologist, people. Oh, no. My gosh. Who knows what you're going to get when you show up? Wow. Before we go talk about the book and things, you mentioned this comparison between oxytocin and cortisol. So maybe we could get some of those big picture insights about how stress can mess up our optimizing our adaptive hormones and how that pattern works a little bit from overview.
Yeah. And I think this is a really important thing that, if I hadn't experienced this, I wouldn't have known to look at this. And first thing is that when we're stressed or have post-traumatic stress, chronic everyday stress, cortisol goes up. When cortisol goes up, oxytocin goes down. You're in stress, fight, flight, freeze mode, right? So you're not connecting in that mode. Anyone ever notice? Super stressed? Not stopping to smell the roses, are you, and appreciate those around you too much? Well, and then when your cortisol's up, your paraventricular nucleus area in your brain says, okay, cortisol, you are frying me out, right? That is that steroid medicine that essentially, you know, is there to protect and save us. But it can, too much, too long is destructive. It's catabolic. It breaks us down. It robs Peter to pay Paul. It takes your minerals, take your bone, take your muscles. Ages you faster than anything. So cortisol is shut down, but at the same time, oxytocin is as well. So you're in this dangerous space where cortisol is low and oxytocin is low. And what that feels like is disconnect.
So the cortisol is low because it's become exhausted by chronic overproduction from all the stress.
Negatively fed back to suppress cortisol. Yeah.
And so, oxytocin is commonly associated with bonding, connection, all those things. So that's kind of its realm there.
And it's the biggest anti-aging hormone, right? It's the hormone of longevity, healthy marriages, having a pet, laughter, connection, community. We know from a study in Berkeley that looked at muscle cell regeneration with oxytocin therapy. I mean, oxytocin increases muscle cell regeneration in the elderly. So this was a group of 70, 80-year-olds that they had studied. And I think that's powerful. The more oxytocin, the better your body repairs itself.
Okay, so they're both suppressed. And what happens then?
I would say that's the physiology of disconnect, the physiology of burnout, physiology of divorce. Yeah. Depression, isolation. You start going into a store and you think, oh my God, I see a friend that I've known forever, but I'm going to pretend they don't see me. You deny invitations to go out. You stay home alone and start being anti, you know, not socializing like you used to. You feel anhedonia, lack of pleasure, lack of enjoyment.
As cortisol also antagonize testosterone, estrogen, things like that as well.
Yeah. When we will sacrifice all our reproductive hormones to make cortisol. And when that system is stressed out and suppressed, everything suffers. It's a hypothalamic depression, essentially.
And again, listeners, this cortisol, this fight or flight response, is incredibly wonderful mechanism for survival and for peak performance. So we want that cortisol spike when we're in the blocks for a sprint race or going up to give the presentation, and it gets all our systems functioning at a heightened level, right? Heart rate, blood pressure, respiration, everything. But we want to have that fight or flight response under tight regulation because it's supposed to be for short-term emergency use only. Yep. And that's where we have a disconnect from our ancestral past and so forth, where we're just calling upon fight or flight every time we have a difficult conversation with a teenager or head to the workplace and there's dysfunction there. And then we go to the gym and we overexercise and all those sort of things.
Yeah. And cortisol wakes us up in the morning. It's natural to spike in the morning. That gets us up. We don't want it spiking at 3 a.m. when it's first getting a chance to rejuvenate itself because it's been, you know, suppressed or we've been burnt out all day. And then at 3 a.m. it spikes. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that goes on physiologically. Resetting your circadian rhythm is essential to healing. I talk about this more in my journey in my first book, The Hormone Fix. And I really go into some of the physiology, the stress physiology, and the other things that disrupt our hormones. I always say it takes more than hormones to fix our hormones.
Right. We have to have some intervention there with someone putting their hand on your head and so forth. So you wrote The Hormone Fix, then you wrote the Keto Green Plant-Based Detox. Is that the title of the book?
Keto Green 16. Yeah. An Keto omnivore. 16. There's two plans in there, two 16-day plans, one omnivore and one plant-based.
Okay. And now we have Menopause.
Yes.
Tell us about this latest, greatest book.
Well, from working with thousands of patients online, thousands of people in my online community, I don't have my brick and mortar anymore. I don't have my clinic. So I do physician to physician consults, and I have my online girlfriend doctor community. So working with women when they're like stuck, say, okay, this doesn't seem to be working. And we've been following the Keto Green lifestyle. So talking about a healthy way for especially women, but I think women and men to do keto, with our, you know, healthy fats, high quality protein, and fiber rich foods and herbs and spices that are also supporting alkalinization, mineral balance within our system, and helping our body clear from an over acid load, which stress alone is going to do that. So we need to incorporate the nutrition, the food, but also the lifestyle factors with intermittent fasting and no more snacking. So that's pretty much like what we do in our community. And then there'll be people that come and they'll say, well, I'm struggling with this or that or the other thing. And sometimes it's, for example, a client who has Hashimoto's. I'm like, okay, let's pause all nightshades. And so the first plan came from that Keto Green Extreme plan. And another person's been doing keto for a while and they've struggled with constipation. They struggle with some digestive issues. So the second plan is completely plant-based. Let's just pause all animal products, give you a break, support gastric motility, support the microbial diversity, gut bacterial diversity in our gut. We know that's associated with longevity and healthier immune systems. And so we'll focus on that. And a third plan is a carnivorous plan. My clients who have severe eczema, psoriasis, or bloat when they eat greens, we've got to pause that for a little bit, really add additional enzymatic support. And it's a nose to tail plan that can help. And then I have a full 6-day cleanse. And then sometimes people have been doing, you know, keto for so long or following a very carb restricted plan for so long, we actually have to add carbohydrates back. And it is the favorite plan among my community. It's the carb up plan. And it's incorporating some healthy root vegetables like sweet potato and more fruit. So it's a, and sometimes, especially like my athletes or people who've been doing keto for a long time can feel better when they pause and add some carbohydrates back in.
Oh my gosh, what a rare guest we have who's a friend to all and not, you know, fiercely defending her corner and her dogmatic approach. So this is super interesting that it's that personalized, because we hear that bantered about, people use that one liner like, hey, it depends on personal preference, but here you are with these distinct plans. I mean, you can't get more distinct than the green plan versus the carnivore-ish plan. And I field a lot of feedback from people that are a little bit confused when we have these amazing explosion of the meat-based, you don't need to eat plants, put those aside, you'll get healthier. And then we have the plant-based community getting bigger and more vocal than ever. And so an average person, I don't know, what's one to think, and how might they like especially engage with some of your recommendations in the book?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that, you know, each of us is different. We are unique, and it depends on what path we've been on till now. And figuring that out is really key. There is a quiz, and each chapter asks, okay, this plan may be best for you if, but I do recommend kind of, especially if you're starting out, going through the plans in the order. And we're doing that online in my Girlfriend Doctor community on my Facebook. So we, you know, to add community, but each person is different. One thing may work for you now, but it may not work for you 6 months from now. Like clients who have come to me who have been doing a straight keto, but weren't doing keto green. They're like, I've started gaining weight. I don't feel good. I'm getting this rash. I'm like, okay, well, let's look and see what's going on. What do we need to pause? What do we need to add? What has to happen here? And I say pauses because exactly what you said, it's not the strict dogma. This isn't the one way you have to live for the rest of your life. And it's important to know that there are seasons for a reason, and intellectually and scientifically, we know that there's reasons for different vegetables and plants and, you know, this and that and styles of eating, fasting and feasting. I'm all about the feasting, actually.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little more, because that seems to me a place where we can have some really good common ground that the body needs that digestive downtime. We know about digestive circadian rhythm research is getting really popular now and how important it is. And then the feast or famine pattern, where you can kind of tap into the assorted benefits of, we hear all about fasting and time-restricted eating and how great it is to be in a fasted state. And then we also need nutrition, and the athletic population needs to recover and perform. And I've tried to figure this out and dance around myself, but the feast or famine concept in general seems to be highly aligned with our ancestral and our genetic expectations for health as well, where we don't have to constantly trickle in the gas pump and squeeze a few pumps in throughout the day, but instead, you know, head to a feeding and then enjoy that meal and appreciate the act of eating more so than just being a constant, you know, vacuum cleaner, putting something in.
Right. And that's really stressful. And it, you know, when I saw something online cross my feed. It said, oh, the way to eat in menopause or something like that. I was like, oh, exciting. I can't wait to see what they say. They've got to be keto green, I'm sure. And it's like, start out your breakfast with a yogurt parfait with fruit and granola drizzled with honey. And I'm like, oh my God, the blood sugar is going to spike up. 2 hours later, they're going to be hungry and craving. Oh, but they had a solution for that. So in 2 hours, they're supposed to have a snack. Oh. And I'm like, that is destructive. We become more insulin resistant. We are designed for fasting midlife and beyond. We are designed for fasting. We have to empower physiology. Gluconeogenesis in the brain is hormone dependent. Estrogen, most likely a factor of progesterone too, being that progesterone is a neuropeptide. And so, but what happens is that as our brain starts starving for fuel, because our hormone levels are dropping, we get the brain fog, we get the anxiety, we get the depression, we get the mood swing. These are neurologic symptoms that are coming along the same time as your physician, your gynecologist is recommending birth control pills, ablation or hysterectomy, right? So there's the gynecologic issues along with the neurologic issues. So I call this time period, age 35 to 55, a period of neuroendocrine vulnerability. Well, our brain is starving for glucose. Even if it's high levels in our blood, it's unable to use it efficiently. And so if we switch to ketones, that is not hormone dependent. So what happens? Author of 3 best-selling books, have hundreds of millions of people online that follow me. 7-8 years ago, I couldn't get out of bed. I was depressed, stressed, hormones were a mess, gaining weight, struggling all the way around. So this is the difference of what I proclaim to be the keto green lifestyle and the way we need to shift in transition in menopause to have a quality second spring of our lives.
So it's particularly relevant to menopause to get skilled at burning the alternative fuel source and get skilled at fasting. And why is that such a vulnerable time?
Because of decline in progesterone and estrogen and testosterone and DHA. So our reproductive hormones are declining. Those are our anabolic hormones. And so we're getting into a catabolic state a lot quicker. And so we are going to gain fat, be inflamed, and be foggy brained. When we shift to ketos, we become more insulin sensitive as opposed to insulin resistant. We are able to manage our energy stores better. We support our mitochondrial function and our neurocognition. We are like ketones, you know that ketones for the brain is like jet fuel versus glucose, which would be regular gasoline. And so it's a different shift. And it's important at all stages of our lives. And the younger you are, the quicker you can get into ketosis. But I consider it essential in the perimenopause and menopause for mood, memory, metabolism, relationships. Productivity.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice. You convey the best way to do that is this feast or famine strategy. In other words, the best way to get into ketone production is through starvation or restriction of external calories. And I think that's been lost in the keto craze of having these snacks on the shelf, these processed foods that say keto on it, and you can nibble on those all day, and those people are missing the point. So, the alternative, or I guess the popularized approach is, hey, eat whatever food you want, just keep your carbs low, and you'll become a member of this wonderful club. But I think it's better to distinguish that this is a genetic attribute that's driven by starvation mainly. But of course, since we don't want to starve, we're trying to figure out a way to get these benefits of keto.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's you're exactly right. And one of the things I always tell my clients, and I write about this, is test, don't guess. I mean, check urine ketones or breath ketones or blood ketones, however you want to check it. Check urine pH. I do that regularly because urine pH is a biomarker for health. And I have, research shows that the more alkaline, 7 or greater urine pH is, the less metabolic disease. And Dr. Perlmutter came out with his latest book, Drop Acid, talking about uric acid. The higher levels of uric acid, the slower your metabolism, the higher risk of all disorders of aging, right? That's a storage mode when your uric acid is high. Mm. There are certain cultures like mine, Middle Eastern, that do that really well, right? We're going to go, we can starve for a long time and be fine. We're adapted that way. So we'll build uric acid on high purine diets like carnivore, for instance. And so you've got to shift, but also shifting to a higher urinary pH is clearing uric acid, is associated with clearing, releasing, and lower levels of uric acid. So at incorporating that in to a healthy, there's unhealthy and healthy ketogenic diets, but to a healthy ketogenic diet, but plus lifestyle, the intermittent fasting. So Keto Green 16 is 16 hours of intermittent fasting. And, and with menopause, each of the 5 plans is 6 days. Day 7 can be a feasting day, can be a fasting day, can be an opportunity to learn what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And that's the beauty of the 5 different plans in menopause.
So this online community and your online practice, tell us how this works now that you don't have your shop in this rural Georgia.
Yeah. So now I'm in Dallas, Texas. Oh. And so basically can follow me at on Instagram and social media. But we have a Girlfriend Doctor membership club, and there's information on that at my website at dranna.com. And that's where I can get on live with people. You know, twice that we do live video, like we're talking now, twice a month, and sometimes more frequently, I'm able to answer questions, address issues, and things that are coming up, and empower women, especially with some of my programs, to be the CEO, have the knowledge of their own body and their physiology. And I think one part that we really miss, especially having studied psychology too as a young woman, is that the mind and body is connected, and physiology affects our behavior, hence what I call the physiology of divorce, that cortisol oxytocin disconnect. But behavior can also empower our physiology or destroy it. And so that wisdom is really important part of healing. So while we focus on food and exercise, there's so much more. And that's why there's no one size fits all. And we have to explore what does our body need and clear the brain fog so that we can really listen.
So the brain fog is an inability to extract the necessary glucose to fuel brain function, which burns a lot of glucose. It's a huge energy demand organ. 20% of our daily calories, right, are just from the brain, and the brain burns only glucose, or in those rare circumstances, ketones. So it is a big deal. But is that we hear brain fog all the time, and then people talk about a variety of driving factors. Mm-hmm. But is that a good way to explain it, or what's this deal?
That is a good way to explain it. Inflammation is another piece of that puzzle, right? The more insulin resistant, the more inflamed, the more insulin resistant, the higher your risk of dementia, Alzheimer's. So it's connected here. And progesterone is a neuroprotective hormone. So when we're 35, our progesterone levels start to decline as women, and men, they decline as well, much slower, but definitely so for women. And that's being our mother hormone. And so recognizing the impact of stress on protective hormones is important because, again, behavior can optimize physiology or destroy it. So perceived stress or real stress, like I had experienced with PTSD, well, over and over again, right? Until I compartmentalized, until I focused on the behaviors to increase oxytocin, was that I wasn't able to shift my physiology.
What do you mean by compartmentalize, and how and what behaviors specifically helped you heal?
Yeah, one thing is, you know, think about just on an example on a daily basis, if you're thinking about the pandemic or the war in Ukraine, and you're thinking about that and you're worried about it all day, it's right to think about concern and pray for and do what we can. But all day, your physiology is in a fight or flight or freeze state. So say to yourself, okay, from 8 to 8:15 today, I'm going to think about it, take some action steps, write this down, journal. And when thoughts come up throughout the day, like I did with the trauma that I experienced, and I could live in that 24/7, but I couldn't live. And so I compartmentalize. And so at 8 to 8:15, that was my time to address that, to focus on that, to pray and think about it. But otherwise, the thoughts would come up and I would tuck them away. I'll deal with
reschedule for tomorrow.
Reschedule.
Right. Absolutely. Let's talk about COVID tomorrow. Thank you for that news headline. Love it.
Exactly. You can say, okay, maybe it's just on Saturdays we'll think about that, or Monday mornings, you know, and really work on that, because you have to understand what it's doing for your physiology and how our thoughts create, you know, actions.
I suppose you can compartmentalize the good things too, such as this is your hour for meditation, reflection, gratitude, outdoor experience, whatever it is. And during that time, that's the central focus, right? You're not out there walking in the woods, looking at your phone about the latest updates from Ukraine.
Right, right. And that's really important to do that. Before I get out of the bed, like how I start my day is with the practice of gratitude. And I think about, where did I see love yesterday? Where am I loved? Where am I loving? Where could I have laughed at myself more? Where did I laugh? And there's always a lot of answers to that. Laughter and love are oxytocin increasing behavior. So I want to focus on that. And then what I'm grateful for also in oxytocin increasing, lowering cortisol. When we can lower cortisol, we can increase oxytocin. We're working on it from a physiologic standpoint to reset our nervous system. And so those are practices that are, you know, part of my morning compartmentalization, if you'd like to say it that way, morning practice or morning ritual.
Love it. I love that research that looking into a dog's eyes is a strong prompter for oxytocin, instant oxytocin release, just engaging with that animal and the, you know, the unconditional love they show their master all the time. And so if I'm getting my dog out in the morning, I'm out in nature, I'm playing with mm-hmm. the dog, I'm talking to the dog, and you're right. You're setting yourself up with these behaviors and, you know, making them
shifts your physiology.
Right. I guess probably a fair amount of us can nod our head and understand or have some, you know, awareness of this. But then in day-to-day life, I feel like we're victimized by the hyperconnectivity and all these forces that push us away from the power that we have to shift our physiology. We forget so easily. And then we get, you know, stuck into the patterns that create that that imbalance, especially as you describe the high cortisol lifestyle, then the cortisol burnout and mm-hmm. The corresponding drop in the adaptive hormones.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of, I had a patient who when in Georgia, and he had been in an accident, train derailed. He was working and train derailed, and he had that traumatic accident, and he'd heard about some of the work I did with oxytocin. And so he came to see me and he said, you know, I'm just feeling, you know I love my wife. I don't feel love for her. I mean, I do things with my child, but I don't get any joy about it. And he goes, because it's just been this way. And that's when I said, well, when did it start? And he goes, gosh, you know, like about a, you know, several months after an accident that he'd had and this had a traumatic brain injury and he had PTSD around that. And that was that was aha moment. So that's when we focused on initially did some supplemental oxytocin that I prescribed him, but also just the awareness that this is what's happening. Your physiology is affecting your behavior. And so addressing the things that you can improve, those oxytocin hits in your life, like the intimacy with your wife, having fun and laughing and the compartment, you know, and being aware that this was under the surface, and then doing EMDR or emotional freedom technique to rewire the nervous system. And with that and supporting his physiology and adrenals, and that was, it just changed his life. But I think the biggest thing that changed it, certainly the temporary supplementation, everything helped, but just the awareness, because that he wasn't broken, you know,
right.
He wasn't broken, and he could feel again. And it would just be a conscious, you know, practice to focus on all the good things and to really bring those in. And it's true. It changed his life, his relationship with his wife and daughter, and it was amazing. And I think before, I think, you know, we have horses. And I think when I remember, I think if I forget if it was 1 year or 2 years later, but he bought his daughter a horse too. And I mean, just like engaging in life, right? Not giving up, which is where he was when I had seen him.
Wow. How does the oxytocin promoting behaviors compare to what we often hear about these dopamine triggers and how we can easily OD on these pleasure-seeking experiences?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And I don't know that I have a good answer for that. I always look at the oxytocin cortisol effect and then what is bringing you pleasure and what becomes a thrill, like where are thrill-seeking pleasures? So there are oxytocin-seeking behaviors, which aren't very different than dopamine-seeking behaviors, like sex, for instance, shopping, gambling, thrill-seeking behaviors. And those are, you know, dopamine increases testosterone. So those are those hits that you can be getting from that. But in a different way, oxytocin affecting cortisol, dopamine has some effect, but not like oxytocin does. So a healing, for healing physiologically, that's the oxytocin hormone, the practices that increase oxytocin.
Yeah, I guess it could be described as like the difference between instant gratification and longer term satisfaction, fulfillment, you know, the deeper meaning and significance, things that give life more meaning and significance, rather than these things that are over with quickly.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because, you know, part of my healing journey, I studied St. Ignatian philosophy and the examine, they call this spiritual examine. And he talks about the spirit of discernment, the desolation versus the spirit of consolation. So the spirit of desolation, when we're feeling sad, and even the saints have experienced this, sad, depressed, unsure, uncertain, and the spirits of consolation, where you have that sense of peace and mm-hmm. reassurance and that sense for the long term that this is the best move. And what St. Ignatius had, because he was a Playboy knight before he converted, essentially, but he was this Playboy knight, and he would joust and, you know, horseback and fight and do all these things. And he got injured, so he was in the hospital for several months. And the only thing he had to read was the Bible. And he explained it this way. He says, when I would think about jousting and all the women and all that, you know, fun, because it would give me excitement for a short term. But when I thought about like the life of the saints and serving God and the love of Jesus, and, you know, went on, he goes, I feel love for the long term. And that resonated really well with me. What's going to give me pleasure in the instant versus pleasure for the long term?
Mm-hmm.
And what practices do that?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Good thing to ask ourselves all the way along, including, there's, you know, there's a pint of ice cream waiting for me in the freezer now. It has my name on it, or whatever. There's so many endless examples.
Yeah. And I think with day 7 in menopause, like when you have that, you can say, okay, well, what's going to happen when I do this ice cream today? How do I feel the next day? I've done, you know, does it shift your physiology? How do you feel? But clearing the brain fog, clearing your senses, receptors, you know, with the hormone balancing foods that I put together, I mean, then you have some clarity to be able to say, okay, I feel great, or more likely, I don't feel great. Mm. I feel inflamed. Now my knees are sore again. And well, good news is we can fix that. So it's that experimentation.
Wow. Dr. Anna, what a show. I'm so glad to connect with you again, and exciting new topics, and really a lot of things to ponder. So the book Menopause, at the time of this show publicizing, is hot off the press. You can get your copy wherever books are sold right now. I would recommend going back and binging on Hormone Fix and Keto Greens. We had a whole show about Keto Greens, so go listen to that. And then if we want to connect with you and join this Facebook community, tell us more about that.
Yeah, so definitely come to my website at dranna.com. And we'll be, we also have book bonuses on my book page on my website at dranna.com/menopause. But when you go to my home site, you can see all of that. And so that'll give you some additional book bonuses and cheat sheets and all kinds of good stuff. Plus, we'll send you an email inviting you into our online community. And I'm on Facebook at The Girlfriend Doctor, on Instagram at The Girlfriend Doctor. That's where I get to watch my grandbaby. So I'm 55 with a 14-year-old and a new grandbaby. So I'm excited about that. My 25-year-old had a baby just recently. I got to deliver her, Brad. I mean, highlight of my life. Yes.
I didn't know that you were allowed to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? You broke the rules.
Yeah, something like that.
You insisted, sure, right. Maybe it was done at home. Who knows, people? But
it was in a birthing center.
There you go. Wow, that's a fantastic full circle. Thanks for those great stories. Dr. Anna Kabeca, everyone. Thanks for listening. Da, 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 da.
Hi, listeners. You may not believe this, but Brad is going to talk about beauty regimens and healthy, toxin-free cosmetics. Yes, this is an incredible new area of personal interest, as about a year ago I noticed, hey, I look and feel pretty healthy and fit all over, except for my skin, and I'd never paid much attention to putting anything on there, but now, oh my gosh, I am a regular with this wonderful vitamin C-enriched all-natural skin serum and numerous other excellent products from a unique company called Beauty Counter. What's important to understand here is that most skincare products contain all manner of toxic ingredients, endocrine disruptors, obesogens, and carcinogens that can harm your health and compromise other devoted diet, exercise, and lifestyle practices. We do not want to get overwhelmed or freaked out here. I know there's so many to-do list items to eat healthy and exercise and sleep, but here, cutting back on your exposure to environmental toxins in every way is a priority. And there's few things more important than what you put on your skin, because guess where it's going? Right into your bloodstream. Here's an interesting tidbit for you European listeners and for you American listeners. Europe, the European Union, has banned thousands of different compounds that are found in conventional skincare and makeup products. You know how many the USA has banned? 11, just like in Spinal Tap. That is not a good scene, people. The responsibility is on us to choose wisely, and that's why I'm so excited about being involved with Beauty Canner, because they do all the research to be sure that you're getting toxin-free, chemical-free products. Oh my gosh, what this means, if you're buying conventional skincare products, there is most likely lead in your lipstick, endocrine disruptors in your perfume or cologne, that stuff that trash our sex hormones, testosterone, estrogen, and all kinds of toxins in things like your antiperspirant. Thankfully, if you go look at beautycanner.com/Brad Kearns, you will discover a clean line of products where every single ingredient in every product is extensively tested for safety. I think you're going to love checking out their product line at beautycanner.com/Brad Kearns and making these simple switches away from toxic-laden mainstream products. Listen to my podcast with Melanie Avalon to go into great detail here about all these concerns. You heard that word, obesogens, I talked about? That's right. Cosmetic products that will actually promote fat storage. Bad deal. So please take a visit there, beautycounter.com/Brad Kearns. If nothing else, try the All Bright Sea Serum in the distinctive yellow bottle. My wrinkles are vanishing as we speak. Thank you for listening to the show. I love sharing the experience with you and greatly appreciate your support. Please email podcast@bradventures.com with feedback, suggestions, and questions for the Q&A shows. Subscribe to our email list at bradkearns.com for a weekly blast about the published episodes and a wonderful bi-monthly newsletter edition with informative articles and practical tips for all aspects of healthy living. You can also download several awesome free ebooks when you subscribe to the email list. And if you could go to the trouble to leave a 5 or 5-star review with Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to the shows, that would be super incredibly awesome. It helps raise the profile of the BRAD podcast and attract new listeners. And did you know that you can share a show with a friend or loved one by just hitting a few buttons in your player and firing off a text message? My awesome podcast player called Overcast allows you to actually record a soundbite excerpt from the episode you're listening to and fire it off with a quick text message. Thank you so much for spreading the word. And remember, be rad.